we'll see what happens. And if you're a liar,
in three, two, one.
Excellent. This is a podcast. We're podcasters now. That's what we do.
We've already done one.
We've done one. So we're
practically professional.
We're a podcaster. There's no, like, official guidelines. It's not like you have to have a body to say whether or not you can be a podcaster.
You can say, it's not like you have to have a body.
A body
in the fridge.
And a mind and a voice.
We could put it on our CVs at
I
the stage.
Think I already have. It's very good.
Been telling everyone. That's how I got my job.
Exactly.
Podcaster.
Everyone respects that. It's not like a... Which is the one? There's a nutritionist and there's a dietitian, and one of them is not a protected term, so anybody can call themselves it and don't have to have any credentials.
I thought that was chiropractor. Right.
I don't know. Someone fact check that quickly.
Chiropractors of the world, get back to us now.
Both of them are protected terms, and I am both of them, and the community hates you now. So, okay. Anyway, I am Jessica Byrne.
I'm Philippa Evans.
And this is our amazing podcast that's very professional.
And amazing and well-researched.
It's wonderful.
Perfect.
Super researched and super factual always.
Just take a breath. You can smell the references.
You can smell it all. You can taste it in the air. And it's called Everything is Awful Forever.
Because it is.
Because it always will be. And nothing will change.
Can you think of a time that wasn't awful? Neither can
we. No. Maybe, like, I had a pretty good Tuesday.
Now it's not too bad, I guess.
It's all right.
I guess.
It's all right. I love that thing that everyone was like, time has never been as bad as it was. But this article is from the 1790s and going back further, where everyone's like, the youth are destroying the world. Time is never as bad as it was now. I think since time was recorded, everyone thinks that the current time is the worst time ever.
That's the fun of entropy. You get people in the 1900s going reading newspapers. People are doing that now.
So, full disclosure, we are so professional that we're currently sat on a bed drinking wine, and I'm using Philippa's iPhone to read my notes for my episode. This is going to be about me, guys. It's not about Philippa always.
I spoke too much the last time.
Shut up. It's about me. So I'm using her iPhone, so I'm going to have to, like, pass it to her every so often to unlock. And we're both drinking, so...
Make shit up. No one will know.
No one cares. No one knows facts.
I mean, this
if people liked facts, Donald Trump wouldn't be president. So
exactly.
There you go.
Facts are out.
Lies are in. So we don't want to talk about terrible things that are currently happening. We might reference them a little bit from time to time, but it's like, our lives are already horrible. We don't want to think about them. We want to think about how horrible other people's lives were far in the past. Although this one is a little bit contemporary. Just a little bit. Yeah.
Sneaking into modernity.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, there's someone in here that I'm going to talk about that's they're currently alive, so it's like, oh shit. But, you know, it's not that bad.
Will they listen to the podcast?
They are definitely going to, because everyone in the world is going to listen to the
podcast. They're all listening right now.
They are.
We have
tuned in somehow. I don't have a good segue into my topic. My topic is about ice pick lobotomies.
That sounds like my current job.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I picked it.
So is that a lobotomy that's done with an ice pick? I mean, is it what it says in the tin?
Yeah, sort of. It's not actually called an ice pick. It's called an orbital clamp. Or it might not be at all. It's fucking a cranial clamp, I think. Basically, it is an ice pick that's given a medical term. So it's just like a shaft with like a spiky end. So it is actually more or less an ice pick. So yeah, it really is. I'll tell you all about it. First of all, though, we need to talk about why ice pick lobotomies were given in the first place. So back in the day, in the good old period of way back when, mental health wasn't really... taken seriously. Oh no, wait, that's right now.
This is too modern.
Oh my god, it really is.
Scrap everything.
Shit, pick a new topic. But seriously, there was a very, very lax way of handling mental health, and lots of things that we now know aren't mental health were considered mental health, and basically you were just kind of like put in more or less a dungeon with the key thrown away because society didn't know what to do with you and didn't really care. They just needed you to go into a prison that was for non-criminals in a way. So asylums are basically you could be locked up in there forever and treated horrifically just because you have something that someone didn't understand.
I'm just going to make up a fact here.
Do it.
I'm sure that the phrase ship of fools comes from Foucault, who said that we basically just piled everybody different who had possibly mental issues or something going on in their life, or they were not like us and therefore wrong. We just piled them onto a ship and set them off.
I've also never heard of that phrase before.
Have you not?
No, that's a fake news.
Fake phrase with a fake fact behind it.
Can we do that? Can you just make up fake phrases?
It's real now.
I'm gonna do it.
But yeah, that's where the phrase that you've never heard of comes from that you've always wondered about.
I feel like a wasp with a bee sting right now. That's a real phrase that definitely exists. I didn't just make it up right now.
So yeah, Foucault thought that we just ship people on ships.
So I did mean to research a lot more about asylums and why you were thrown in there and what they were like, but I just didn't. So what I've got is a small thing about reasons for admission. So this is something that is probably debunked, but I'm going to read it to you anyway because it's funny. This is a reasons for admission to a mental asylum between 1864 and 1889. So some of them, these are mostly women as well, because, you know,
I was going to say number one,
women are crazy. Reasons for admission: you are female and your husband is annoyed with you. Intemperance and business trouble. Kicked in the head by a horse. Yeah, that's fair. Hereditary predisposition. Yeah, fair enough. Hysteria. Immoral life. Novel reading?
Oh my god.
Don't do it, you crazy bitch.
We talked about it in the last episode. It basically fucks up your complexion.
It really does.
What does it do to your brain? God damn it.
Who knows? You need to be locked up. Locked away forever. Overaction of the mind. Parents were cousins. Bad company. I just don't like talking to you. You're boring.
Well,
get you out of here.
Maybe in Victorian asylums, that was great company.
Maybe.
So they were remedying that.
Let's see. Brain fever. Okay, that's pretty fair. Deranged masturbation. A lot of these are about masturbation, but deranged masturbation really stood out for me. Bad whiskey. Don't even know what. Some of these are great because it's just like politics. Why are you? You've been admitted to politics. Don't really understand. Desertion by husband. Dropsy. Exposure. And Quaker. Or is it Quacker?
Quaker?
Quacker. Exposure and Quacker.
It does say Quacker, but I want Quackery? No, Quacker?
No, just Quacker. Exposure and Quacker. Don't do it. You're crazy.
Maybe they just misspelled Quaker.
Yeah, but then what does that mean?
And that's why making that matter. How does it relate to exposure?
Oh, no, okay. Fighting fire. That's why you are in a mental institution. The war. Hard study. Too hard? You're crazy. What are you doing? You're trying to improve your life? Get out of here. We don't want that. Fell from a horse in the war.
That's very specific.
And also, female disease. The rest of them are all about masturbation, so we're just going to say that you could kind of be admitted into a mental hospital for a litany of crazy reasons, and I think we should do an entire episode on that.
I thought you were going to say an entire episode on masturbation.
We should, because that's also
bizarre.
That's also fun. Let's move on. Treatment and research was really, really limited, even in the 30s, which is where our story is coming into. It wasn't as bad as all this, like you couldn't just be shipped off because you were a promiscuous woman, but you kind of could still be a little bit. You were just sort of like put away from society. It just wasn't enough treatment that was valid back in those days. Lobotomy research first came about because there was a study done by a couple of Yale researchers in the USA in 1933. They removed the prefrontal cortexes from a pair of monkeys. I don't really know what led them to doing that. I assume they were just cutting off pieces of animals to see what would happen for fun.
I think explains a lot of the Victorian period. They're like, we did it because we could.
Yeah, and also just like the earliest 20th century.
Back when things were fun.
Back when things were fun and you can have a good time like cutting up pieces of monkeys.
Unlike now.
There's rules and fucking
regulations. The squares.
God, it's a bunch of nerds. So, yeah, they removed a prefrontal cortexes. I'm not going to be able to say this the entire episode. So no, the cortexes from the monkeys. And what they discovered was that they could still function as animals. They just didn't do the violent outbursts that monkeys are prone to. They were very docile and calm. And so they thought, let's do this on people we don't like. those weirdos with their mental health problems that we don't really want to look into. We could just cut off part of their brains and make them calm like these monkeys.
I mean, if only the world just sat quietly.
Just shush. Sit down and have all the same thoughts and opinions as me. So the first lobotomies performed on people was in 1935. And it was a couple of doctors called Dr. Antonio... Oh, no. Okay, let's go here and say we're going to be really bad at pronouncing everything. I can't even say prefrontal cortexes. So these are a couple of Portuguese doctors.
What's his name?
So Muniz, I think. Muniz, that's not so bad. So Dr. Antonio Agas Muniz and Dr. Almeida Lima in Portugal performed the first lobotomies by drilling holes into the skulls of people on either side of the prefrontal cortex. So that's like right in front of your temples, I imagine. But they would inject alcohol into the brain, and what that did was destroy the fibers that connected the neurons. But it was a very imprecise procedure because it was liquid, so they would pour them into the brain and then it would just go through the brain and destroy so many other things as well. So the success rate, quote unquote success rate, of this procedure was really limited and just bad. Just real bad. You don't want alcohol trickling through your brain, destroying it.
Well, I mean, that describes at least a good third of my life.
Yeah, I think most people would probably like the idea of injecting alcohol straight into the brain so it doesn't bypass every other part.
So, do people just die?
Not from
this. Or did they become comatose? Or?
They mostly did. The alcohol technique was sloppy because it leaked around. In the summer of 1936, the first patient of one of the main guys we're going to start talking about is Walter Freeman. He was the lobotomy guy. I think, in fact, that he coined the phrase. So he observed Dr. Muniz doing these lobotomies and seeing what it did to patients. And what Freeman wanted to do was do that because it looked fun. But he wanted to do it better. So I'm going to go back to talk about what the prefrontal cortex actually does first before we get to that point. This is where all your complex functions or executive functions come from. It's where your high-level decision-making comes from. It's basically all of your personality. So like your expression, your decision-making, your ideas and thoughts and everything that makes you you. So when you get rid of that, they used to call it the surgery of the soul because they took away your personality.
That's what we want to do to people.
That's what we want to do. We don't want them to have too much personality because then they've got thoughts and stuff.
I won't lie. As I go through life, I encounter a lot of people where I'm like, they could do with a soul removal.
I mean, we're not saying that we kind of wish it was still a thing because, some people.
I mean, everything is awful forever, but is it?
But if you lobotomize them, a successful lobotomy would mean that people would still function. They could talk and walk around and do everything, but it just took away from them everything that they used to be as a person. It's like a blank slate. You're almost like a robot in that way. You just were human, bland, nothing. You didn't really have ideas or creation or anything like that. You could just walk around and be, but without anything further.
Do you know, did they know if you could like grow from there or like learn things again? Or were they just like, yes, this is your perfect state?
And that's kind of it. You were just done. Like you would you'd taken the ability to have complex thought taken away from you, so you were just like docile, calm, nothing. You didn't have the ability to have that extreme emotion anymore.
Well, extreme emotion is not what we wanted people to have back then.
Especially women. Most of the patients that I got to were women. One of the most famous patients was a man because he was lobotomized when he was 12. He's still alive.
Oh!
Yeah. And that's why I was like, oh no, it's a little bit contemporary because he's still alive. And he been functioning kind of well in society, but he just always wonders what his life would be like because this was taken away from him. Like, what would his life be like without this procedure that was done to him? Very interesting. Anyway, let's go back to Dr. Freeman. That's what the prefrontal cortex does. It's very important because people didn't really know how else to deal with people that had complex mental problems. They just thought quietening them down would make it better. They also thought that they were doing some good. A lot of these people were very distressed. Obviously, a lot of mental health can be really harrowing. So quietening and taking that away from them, they thought was a good thing.
Although by complex mental problems, we're still in very vague understanding of what...
I will get to a point later on that says why some people will lobotomize and it'll make you be just sick on the floor. So, Walter Freeman, his first attempt at lobotomizing after watching Muniz's technique was drilling holes into the skull at the side of the head and then injecting alcohol. So in the summer of 1936 was his first patient that he ever did lobotomies on, was Mrs. Hammett. She was a 63-year-old suffering from depression. So we still don't really understand much about depression now. It can be so vague. And also something that you can manage and live with. But at the time, obviously, it was dark for her. She needed to go to a mental institution in which she would be locked away forever if she did that. So Freeman wanted to save her from that. Looking at this technique, wanted to try and lobotomize her. She wanted to take a chance with the new and radical operation that he was bringing to America. And the first lobotomy was scheduled for September the 14th, 1936. She tried to change her mind, but as an insane person back in that era, you weren't really allowed to have your thoughts. And so she was forcibly anesthetized because she wanted to have it done. Then she changed her mind because it was scary. And this wasn't anesthetic as we know now as well. It was pretty bad.
It sounded so good. I mean, I was like, okay, so she wasn't happy and she agreed to it. So yeah. It sounded like a good idea. No, that just went dark.
And then she withdrew consent and the man said, no, we're doing it anyway. You've gone so far and you said yes before, so you're just clearly insane. So we're just going to do it, do you? Later, Freeman recorded that her last words before the surgery. Who is this man? What does he want here? What's he going to do to me? Tell him to go away. Oh, I don't want to see him. Followed by a scream. Listen to the Comedy Podcast.
We got dark really quickly.
We did get real dark. I mean, let's make more jokes about this. It was really horrible, terrible, fascinating thing that happened to people. And some are still alive today from it. But some are not. Freeman noted that the aftercare for the people receiving this kind of lobotomy with alcohol was intense. People had to relearn how to use the bathroom, how to just do anything, basically. And the nurses, they were peed on and other awful things because most of it was destroying a lot of their brain because it would leak through into other parts of the brain. So he questioned the effectiveness of this and wanted to find a more awesome way to do it.
Oh, great.
One that he could turn into a show and tour around America.
That's where my mind went.
That's where someone wants to go to, like, help people. So, how can I monetize this? It's the American dream, or so I believe.
But, I mean, the Victorians had a thing about complex mental states as being entertainment. Because before then, you could always... They treated asylums as, like, a zoo. You could watch those vigorously masturbating woman for a couple of pennies.
Yeah, and so in true capitalist fashion, he'd be like, these people are crazy and I've got this cool thing that I'm gonna do. So how can I monetize this? People already want to see it, so how can I get involved? In January of 1946, he performed the first transorbital lobotomy. That's the one that we know as the ice pick lobotomy. His first patient was Ellen Ionesco. So no anesthetic for this one. Not in the way that we know it. He would use electroshock therapy. So, no anesthetist. There was no anesthetics used at the time, not at least as we know it. So no anesthetist was needed, which means it was a lot quicker. What he would use was electroshock therapy to knock people out. So not only is he about to stab someone in the brain, but he zaps them first. This is true, like, science. Supervillain. Science. Medicine.
It always works.
Good shit. We don't really have to worry about patient safety or all this because they're already crazy, so it doesn't matter to the world. So you can just zap him and then stab him in the brain. So what he did was, he took a tool, which found it in the kitchen. He was like, yeah, sure, this looks good. Let's do it. So it was essentially an ice pick. It's just like a pointy shaft that's just a ice pick. What he would do to do the ice pick lobotomy was put the tip of the ice pick between your eyeball and your orbital bone, so like where your eyebrow is, and there. And so he'd push that through back into the back of the orbital bone. So he'd put that back in through there until you reach the back of the bone where your eye is housed. And then he would take like a tiny little hammer and go tink, 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 and go through into the brain.
It looks so smooth, efficient, and great in Sucker Punch.
Yeah. But nasty times. Bad. You get bore through the skull into the brain and then mush it around, so you just like shimmy it and like scramble it up in there.
That's surgical precision.
And one of the nurses on hands reported that it sounded like tearing cloth as he tore your prefrontal cortex all around.
I mean, good thing it was in the front, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Easily reachable.
Yeah. That was the whole point, because by boring through the side of the head through the temples was difficult and bad, but this one just goes straight through the eye. There you go. Bosh, brain, done.
It's funny that we looked at things like trepanning and we're like, barbarians!
Terrible!
Drilling holes in the skull.
Oh my God. But this eye thing,
Pointy thing through there, see what happens.
Yeah, but he would do this on both sides as well, so this would happen to both eyes.
It would just be the one.
No, it's not. You need both done. So both of them would go through, scramble it all about, and then done. And that's it. Sometimes it can take about 10 minutes. I am very squeamish, so a lot of this isn't going to go into a lot of medical detail because it upsets me a lot. So I'm just going to have a bit of an overview, and it upsets me because it's talking about eyes and it's just gross. So he would do this on both sides of the eye. Sometimes he would perform the surgery and then send someone home in a taxi hours after. So done. Like the other kind, they would have so much aftercare. This one, go home. You're done. You're lobotomized. Bish, bash, bosh.
And then I guess the aftercare would be left to the relatives. So
there wasn't really much aftercare needed for this. There were some people, I mean, whilst reading through all of this, there's some people that said, some people had massive hemorrhages, some people died. Fuck it. Some people just kind of went home and was all right. So this person, the person that he first performed his transorbital lobotomy on was Mrs. Hamat. So Mrs. Hamat emerged a transformed woman. She felt a great relief of her anxiety. Basically, all of everything that was worrying her was gone. She had a huge hemorrhage on her second day of recovery, but then she got over it. She's a strong lady.
But I'm guessing that these comments are based on observation rather than Mrs. Hamat being like, oh yes, thank you, I feel much better.
Because she isn't really capable of saying that anymore. She's like, I feel much better. I don't feel anything anymore. Actually, I have a quote from her daughter. After the transorbital lobotomy, there was nothing. It stopped immediately. It was just peace. I don't know how to explain it to you. It was like turning a coin over that quick. Whatever he did something right. So she survived for 5 years after that. That was the 5 happiest years of her life.
I mean, what were the previous ones, 60 before?
I mean, she was suicidal before, but she died 5 years after not being suicidal. So there you go. The results from these kind of lobotomies were varied because some of them resulted in death. Some of them were quite successful in the quote-unquote, again, successful, so you could do it, and the result is what you wanted, but, you know, it's not great for humans or anything. But they achieved what they wanted to do. Successful.
Success. I mean, decent odds.
There you go. There you go. A lot of people died in them. So he got so good at this, and he did it so quickly that he kind of turned it into a show. Estimates run from about 2,000 and 5,000 people from this one guy from 1946 to 1967 in 23 states. That's a lot of people lobotomized. 5,000 people. That's pretty bad. I don't like that.
That's a lot of ice picks.
That's a lot of ice picks tearing cloth around inside your skull. He had a lobotomobile that he would drive around and give demonstrations.
That is the best part of this whole part.
It's pretty like a lobotomobile. To the lobotomobile! There's a woman, she has opinions. The lobotomobile! So he would sometimes do demonstrations. People would come and watch. They wanted to see what would happen to the crazy person. And then he would kind of like turn it into a show. So he had a lot of flair, a lot of panache. He would sometimes do two at a time. Because as it needed to be done to both eyes, he'd be like, watch this, bitch. Ice picks in both eyes. Ding, 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 done. And a lot of people died like this. But this one time he wanted to take a photograph of it. So he was like, wait, I've got both two ice picks in both eyes. This is awesome. This needs to go on my Instagram. I need to take a photo of this.
Hold and snap.
So what happened? The ice pick slipped into the person's brain and they just died immediately as he was taking a photo of it.
Did he suffer from any legal repercussions?
Not really, because he was doing it to people that no one really cared about. So it was like a lot of doctors, real doctors, because, well, he wasn't a surgeon, he was a psychiatrist. So he just decided to take it upon himself to do it because he wanted to. There were doctors and real physicians at the time like, this is kind of bad. But he was just making so much of a splash in the newspapers because he was really good at marketing himself as well. Like, he wanted to be in the newspapers and causing a fuss. And he did.
It was just like a, oops.
They're dead. But, you know, they were locked in here forever anyway. No one cared about them. So in West Virginia, in 1 week, he performed 228 in 1 week. And then there was one day where he did 25. Oh. That's just too much.
You feel that you shouldn't be able to do more than 1 hour.
Yeah, you feel like a lobotomy seems a bit more serious than doing 25 a day.
Mm.
There was one day in an asylum where he killed 3 people in that one day. No one cared. He just
kind of went home and was like, eh.
Meh. They were crazy anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm glad that mental health representation and care has just improved.
Yeah.
So much. we're flippant, it has, but not enough.
Yeah. Not as much as we want to just lobotomize them so they're quiet, at least. He loved lobotomy so much that he used to think of therapy as a last resort. Like, he wanted lobotomy first. Like, last resort is therapy.
So before you sit down with Mildred, our eternal person.
Mildred is going to be the one Mildred. Who has all the shit happen to her, yeah.
And before you're like, Mildred, why don't you keep a bullet journal and maybe try some yoga?
Yeah.
No, lobotomy.
Lobotomy. Just get it done. Shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, why cut out the middleman? You want the quiet, happy life. Just take
part. Go straight to it.
Scramble part of your brain out. You might die. Not though,
but it's not like a bullet journal's gonna do anything, Mildred.
He did lobotomies to people for the reasons as follows. Some of them were postpartum depression, sadness in the terminally ill, overactive imagination. one of the most famous ones, the guy that I said was still alive, Howard Dilly. His stepmother wanted him to do it to him when he was 12 because, kind of for like 12-year-old reasons, like he was daydreaming a lot.
That shows an insane reach.
He was basically like a stepmother who had a rambunctious kid, supposedly, and just kind of wanted them to be quiet and docile.
I am not particularly maternal,
no. No.
But.
Yeah. You don't really want to just cut out someone's brain because they turn the lights on when it's already daylight. That's a real reason. I'm not making that up. That's one of the reasons why Dilly was given a lobotomy, because he turned the lights on when the light was dim.
I mean, that just sounds like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, just a reluctance to going to bed, but then when he went to bed, he slept well. So it's like, why do you want to not go to bed? You sleep well when you go there. You must need part of your brain removed.
Oh.
So you can read a lot more about him from Google. Just Google Howard Dilly, because there's a lot on him and how he lives his life with a lobotomy. And he functioned kind of well. The stepmother then also kicked him out of the house and he became a ward of the state after this happened. She was lobotomized.
After it happened.
Lobotomized him was like, maybe I just don't like you. And that's why I did this. But
get out.
That is bad. Get out. One of the most high-profile people that Freeman lobotomized was John F. Kennedy's sister, Rosemary. She was 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And she was shy, but when she became a teenager, basically she became a teenager, and they were like, this is weird, she's different now. Lobotomize her.
And was it her parents who?
Yeah, and so that's why there's some people that think that maybe she had some kind of mental problems before that, but they can't really say, because she was ruined forever, basically. Mm. Like, the lobotomy didn't go well. I mean, well, again, quote-unquote. And so she couldn't really control her bodily functions anymore. She just became someone that needed care for the rest of her life because of this. So, the end of Freeman's reign of terror, as he was tearing around the country in his lobotomobile, which is excellent to say, showing everyone how great it was that a woman who had 3 lobotomies from him.
3?
Because she thought that it was so good and helped her so much, she wanted a third one.
Did she think that, or did someone else?
Sure.
That?
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like after a lobotomy, your ability to be like, that worked.
Maybe she's just was like, yes, dear. And the husband was like, maybe you should have another lobotomy again because you didn't clean my socks well. And she was like, that's right, dear. Mm. And so they go and take her there. Her name is Helen Mortensen. Her third lobotomy, she dies from a brain hemorrhage following the procedure. And then this was in 1967. So by then, there's been a lot of strides towards mental health, especially concerning schizophrenia, which is still kind of not very understood, but especially back then. A drug called Thorazine came about, which was really helpful in treating a lot of people. That came about to a lot of success instead of lobotomizing people, and so it sort of fell out of popularity, and this was his last one in 1967, where she died and so he wasn't allowed to do them anymore. They banned him from it, and the rest of the time he spent following up with the patients that he lobotomized, because he really genuinely believed that this was the way to help them.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
It's so evil in a way. It's like you think you're helping them, but it's horrible.
On the one hand, he seems so flippant. I mean, he's flexing for the gram while he double lobotomizes.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he thought he was helping and followed up afterwards.
He died in 1972 of cancer.
I mean, not quite poetic irony.
Not really. I kind of wanted him to have a brain hemorrhage or something. And that's Ice Pick Lobotomies, mostly Walter Freeman. So, yeah, grisly, good, interesting, bad. Everything's awful forever. Good though, right?
I had not known about.
Yeah, so there's still people walking around, because that was fairly recently. 1967 is the last one. And this guy, Dooley, his take and his sort of like normalish life of walking around as a lobotomized person.
Some really bizarre psychiatric treatments like electroshock therapy, they are still done today.
Mm.
And they changed and improved. And
oh, yeah.
I'm not a psychologist.
What?
Oh my god!
This whole time? Jesus!
Been lying to me. So I can't, you know, speak about their effectiveness or their appropriateness.
Mm.
But then when you find out that things like lobotomies have been done up until now, that's pretty...
pretty bad.
Mm.
But they're not anymore. That we know of.
Well.
In our society.
In public.
Possibly.
Where we can see them.
Heavy.
I think we're going to have to talk about something like...
something nice.
Mummy juice.
Yeah, something silly and in the past.
Where we can be like, that was long ago.
That was way long ago.
We can laugh about it now.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, should we say something nice now to balance out that heaviness?
I don't know if we can balance that out.
Yeah, no, it's a lot, isn't it?
Happy thoughts.
Mm.
Which video? Oh God, happy thoughts.
Think about your rabbit. Think about nice things. Think about...
It's always going to be the rabbit.
It's always the rabbit's good. They have lovely bunnies. Yeah.
I was given a plant to nurture today.
Oh.
That makes me happy.
That's nice.
It's the jasmine that was present.
Oh.
As I pointed, and our entire audience can see the jasmine that
I'm take a picture
gesturing
of
toward.
That one, it's lovely. What else is a nice thing? Yesterday, I had a bath, but I had a beer in the bath and also a cheeseburger.
In the bath.
A cheeseburger and a beer in my bubble bath with the candles and everything. And then I was watching something on my iPad, like, yeah.
That sounds
this
amazing.
Is half, like, half young man with like a beer and a burger, half delicate lady with the bath.
Rose petals.
Real good.
Steam.
I wish I had the rose petals. I didn't quite, but like candles and bubbles and burgers and beer is what more do you want from life?
So I guess we could ask our listeners. Don't worry about the facts. Don't check them.
Don't check them.
But tell us what nice things happened to you.
Yes, because
cheers
that
up.
Was bad. This is the second episode. Maybe we should save this one for later.
We'll be like, this is episode number 4.
So Philippa's are going to be light and fun. Mine are going to be real dark.
Next time I'll talk about fluffy cats.
Mm, yeah, okay. Yeah, that sounds nice. So, yeah. That's Ice Pick Lobotomies. Everything's awful forever.
And I guess let's just say bye.
Bye!